Hey, Collaborist, it's intern Maddie, and on this episode of Collaborcast, we're talking about how to get into publishing.
Hey, Collaborist, I'm Ben Leroy.
And I'm intern Maddie.
And you are listening to Collaborcast. How you doing today, Miss Maddie?
Good, how are you doing?
Good. I heard that you guys had a little hurricane remnant action down there in the South Carolina.
We had a sprinkle of Debbie. We weren't hit too hard because I'm in the mountain region of South Carolina, but definitely rain for, I think, like 6 hours straight. But my uncle's in North Carolina. I mean, torrential the entire day.
Everybody safe?
Yes.
Okay, good. Yeah. We decided that we were going to have a conversation about how to get into the publishing industry. You are somebody who is doing a summer internship to learn a little bit more about the publishing industry. And it occurred to me that there are a lot of people in your position, people who want to get into the publishing industry. And so we, you and me, thought it would be good to have a conversation about it. This is not scripted. I don't know what questions Maddie has. And I do also want to be very clear that my memory is historically garbage. It is not good. I do a great job of storing some bits of information and terrible job at others. So I'm going on my best memory, what I believe to be the truth, how I believe things happened. But if you ever run into a peer of mine or anyone who I worked with over the years and they have a stronger memory of how something worked, I would defer to them. So I have no ill intent, but my memory, some of this stuff is a quarter century old at this point, and my memory is going to be a little bit shaky, I'm sure, but I'll do my best.
Okay. So I wanted to start it off in the way of how I felt like everything started for me and my desire to join this, and that was growing up. Growing up, like, I'm a basketball player in college, so people would assume that was kind of like my first love, and it is, but the first thing I ever really fell in love with was reading, and that's kind of how I knew, like, from the beginning, and I told you this in my cover letter, like, it's always been reading. I've always loved it. I've been around it my entire life. So I was curious what your relationship was like growing up with literature, how it's changed, how it's progressed, and especially working in the business, like, has it deteriorated? Has it grown? Like, how does that play into it for you?
Like you, and I assume a lot of people who are in the publishing industry, but also people who may be thinking about getting in the publishing industry, books were so important to me. My whole childhood was just reading whatever I could. And it didn't even have to be something, I didn't even judge a book by a cover. I just knew it was a book and mm-hmm. I wanted to read it because I was so enthralled with the stories that people came up with and being able to see myself reflected in the characters or think about what I might want to do when I grow up. My dad and I used to read the Hardy Boys books, and that's just, I can remember taking turns reading, and I can just remember being so engrossed in storytelling. And I would go to the library and I would pick out 10 books and right. I would read them all. I was, my overall, like, once we get into like college, my GPA is certainly mm-hmm. nothing to write any kind of fun story about, but when I was a kid, I was obsessed with learning new words. I have somewhere in my personal archives in mm-hmm. second grade, when we would have spelling tests, I would take the spelling test and then I would write 10 more words. It wasn't even that I was getting extra credit. I just wanted to be able to show off, I guess. It's maybe little Ben's ego. I just wanted to be able to be like, I also know these words too. And I would pick big words. And I just felt very much at home there. And in college, I continued to read. I just loved books and I couldn't get enough. I don't know that I've ever been anyone who can academically tear apart a book and say, well, like, clearly this is an allusion to this other thing that I cannot profess to be a profound reader in that sense, but I know that it became very clear to me that books were, at least for me, the most direct and powerful sharing of the human condition that I had come across. And I recognized that the writer was writing to be heard, and the reader was reading to see themselves reflected, and that both of these acts are to let ourselves know that we are not alone in the grand matter that is the universe, and that that is such a powerful validation of our existence to just see other humans being human and know that we are a part of that collective. My enjoyment of reading, unfortunately, and this is, to me, it often feels tragic. My enjoyment for reading diminished over the course of the 20 plus years that I have spent in the publishing industry. And it's because I was no longer able to just see the story.
Yeah.
There was a part of my brain that became automatic and conditioned to start asking questions about, well, how would I edit this? What should the book cover look like? What bookstore would be a fan of this book? Who's the reviewer that I should talk to? How much money could this make if you would have done something differently? So I started asking all of these publishing industry-based questions, which are natural because it's about a book, but yeah. It took away from my ability to enjoy story. And I spend a lot of my time now editing and ghostwriting for clients, which means that by the end of the day, I don't have a lot of brain tissue left for just enjoying reading a book.
Mm-hmm. No, that makes sense. I was gonna ask, as soon as you start talking about like the current stage, if it was like seeing the process from beginning to end, if that kind of takes out a little bit of like the magic of it, of like reading
absolutely.
A book that you find for yourself. But it's like, I know this probably started and wasn't that amazing in the beginning. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Knowing how the sausage is made makes it definitely. It takes some of the joy out. And I know that my experience that way is not the universal experience. I have friends who are very much agents, publishers, editors, who still very much read outside of their work and enjoy it and love it. It's just something happened with my brain. And it may be from actually running a publishing company. So it wasn't just the editing. I was just getting hit on all sides of all of these secondary considerations.
Yeah, no, that makes total sense. And that perfectly goes into what I was going to ask you next about what was like the shove, or were you your own push to take that first step into like almost like the adulthood of being like, okay, I want to start my career now. This is how I want to do it. Cause you took a pretty like daring jump that most people don't usually take. If I could describe it.
Yeah. So I had a company that I started with some friends back in the late 90s, and we were in our early 20s.
Mm-hmm.
And we had this idea that we were going to start a self-sustaining multimedia conglomerate where one person might write a book, there might be some other people in the company who are actors, there'd be someone else who is a musician and would do the soundtrack. And we just got into all of these things. We aspirationally got into all of those things. And so what that meant in real life was managing some bands, but that was adult babysitting or young adult babysitting. I'd get a call from like a bar owner at midnight and be like, hey, the band's supposed to be on, but they're not here. And, and publishing was one of the things that we included of what we wanted to do. And over time, managing artists, managing musicians, that all kind of fell by the wayside, and the publishing is what remained. So my foray into publishing was me saying, I guess I'm a publisher now. And this was the late 90s, and there weren't nearly as many options for how to get into running your own publishing company. There were certainly more than there had been a decade earlier, or, you know, more longer. But there weren't as many available materials as there are today. So again, I want to reiterate that my experience is likely atypical for what somebody today would be able to do. It just happened to be the last part, maybe, of a certain era of the publishing industry. This was before audiobooks were a big deal. This was before ebooks were a big deal. This was before self-publishing was a viable option for people. Like, those things were all on the horizon, or they existed in some greatly minimized version of what they are now.
Yeah.
And so it's just kind of a different industry. But yeah, I chose to run a publishing company, did not have health insurance, did not have a paycheck. My business partner at the time had some money and was able to finance the production of the books. And then we kind of DIY'd a publishing company, and we built it enough and did quality enough work that we started being able to get our books reviewed in places like Publishers Weekly and Library Journal, which for a small press, especially at that time, was a mark of... It was validation. It was a mark of like, okay, this is a legitimate, the books that they're putting out are legitimate. And we were, you know, making sure that the covers looked market ready and the editing was market ready. And we set up book tours and we did all of the stuff that was expected of us. But there was still, because publishing is an industry with very thin margins, there was not money for a paycheck. There was not money for health insurance. And my one of my two old business partners, Allison and I were pretty convinced that we had hit a point where there was no future. That was for Bleak House Books, that there was no viable path forward because people need to eat and pay rent and car payments, et cetera. And we were just kind of not being able to do those things. And we got approached by a gentleman who wanted to have his book come out. He had a lot of money. And he said, I'll buy your company, but you're going to be putting out my book as part of that deal. And the book that he gave to us was not something that we were interested in publishing. So there was this push and pull of, okay, but if you do publish this, there'll at least be some money for a short term where you might be able to keep things going. But your credibility is also going to maybe take a hit because you're putting out something that you know to not be up to the standards that you want. And we had a meeting with that gentleman and we were like, well, we just can't do it. So we were prepared to shut down. And we had been at Book Expo America in 2005. And like, we literally were like, okay, this is done. Mm-hmm. It's over. Good job. We had some cool experiences, but this is over. And then out of the blue, we got an email from somebody who ran a much larger publishing company. And he asked if we would be willing to sell the company to him, because he was trying to get a bunch of divisions for his publishing company. And he said, as part of the terms of selling, we'll give you a paycheck, health insurance, a retirement fund, and we'll also be able to capitalize all of the printing bills, design bills, etc. So that was an absolute miracle. I still sometimes I'm like, did that really happen? Because yeah, it just doesn't happen. So they came, they purchased us. I went from being an owner of the company to just being an employee, but still maintaining as a publisher. Mm-hmm. And was able to acquire more books and go to more places. And I would every now and then get a call from somebody in Hollywood who might want to get the rights to something that we've published. And, you know, do you want to go out? I remember I was very excited because we got invited to George Clooney's production company at one point to talk about one of the books that we put out.
Am I getting an invite for that soon too?
What's that?
Am I going to get an invite for that soon too?
Yeah. Yeah. And there was just this like golden period where my life didn't make any sense, because I was like going all of these places, and I think we were in some ways ahead of our time, because so much of publishing is concentrated in larger metropolitan areas, specifically New York City. And we were just a couple of 20-year-olds in the Midwest, in Madison, running a publishing company out of a small old house that is now a dumpling restaurant. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it was just this magical period. And I had been an English major. I had not been a business major. I majored in English and philosophy at the University of Wisconsin, Milwaukee, which is not a powerhouse university. It was a, do you have a pulse and can you afford tuition? All right, come on in. And so what I want to say is that, like, I see people who are taking highly specialized courses, publishing courses, and worried about where they are going to school and if that's going to be sufficient to get them into the publishing industry. And I just feel like all of that is so arbitrary, and that there are so many people who are applying for jobs that are very limited, that getting tangled up in this idea of I have to have this academic background that's going to cost a lot of money. It is. And then I'll get a job in publishing that's not going to pay all that much. And it's sad to me. It's sad to me because it's an industry that, because the margins are so thin, it's got two problems. It can't afford to pay people what they need to be paid to live where those companies are. And as an industry, that so much of what is published is seen through a very particular type of eye. And the historical complaint has been, you've got people who can afford to live in New York City, who went to colleges and universities of a certain pedigree, who are now the people who are reading the slush pile, which is what gets passed on to the acquiring editors. And so it's potentially a very bubbled worldview that does not take into account the lived in experiences of people from different backgrounds. And I mean that geographically, I mean that demographically. It's concentrated. And I think that on the whole, from what I'm seeing, some of that, because there's been awareness brought to it, some of that is changing. But there are so many great books and great stories that would be absolutely devoured by an audience that never get read because of the consolidation and concentration of who is selecting what gets published and what does not get published. So to that end, I think about my entry into the publishing world, and I think about just not knowing any better. I'd like to tell you that, like, I just had a plan and I knew, and I was smart, and a lot of it was blind ass luck and the having grown up on a steady diet of punk rock, thinking like, yeah, I can do this. Like, don't try to stop me, because I'm just going to do this. And somehow I stumbled into it. And then when my time at Bleak House came to an end, because I had a disagreement, the guy who had purchased Bleak House after 3 years or so decided that he wanted to go to an ebook only model and no print books. And I had a disagreement with that, because I believe very strongly in the book as an artifact. I believe strongly that, like, there is something to the tactile and the smell of a book. I get that other people can enjoy reading ebooks, and I don't want to rain on their parade. I'm not saying anything bad about ebooks. I'm just saying, personally, I like the analog in this case. So I left Bleak House. Allison and I left Bleak House, and we started Tyrus Books. And at that point, we had a name in the publishing industry. We had a reputation. People knew who we were. But starting a publishing company from scratch is not easy. And there are a lot of people who try to do that, but are severely undercapitalized. And so they can't afford to do the necessary things to have a sustainable business. I took out a $40,000 loan from a local businessman and said, I'm going to start a new publishing company with $40,000, which is a horrible idea, which is significantly insufficient as far as how much money you need to start a publishing company to do it, to be on a certain level. And again, times have changed. Other people have figured out ways to make the model work for them. And then again, I was working without a paycheck, without health insurance, making sure that printing bills got paid, and got some cool things. Got to do, we did a short story collection set in the Mississippi Delta, and got a foreword from Morgan Freeman for the book. Got to do the release party at Morgan Freeman's Blues Club in Mississippi. There's a picture of me, maybe I'll put it in the show notes, me and Morgan Freeman shaking hands. And again, it was just another case of like, what is my life? We published a book by James Franco's mom, and went to a party put on by People magazine, and James Franco's mom, Betsy, and I took a bicycle cab through Manhattan to get to the party because there were no cabs. I have that video on the show notes too. It was just like wild period, and none of it was financially lucrative. And it ran into the same problems where there just wasn't money to pay myself, Allison. We had some investors who came on, but it was, you know, so you need $100,000 and here's someone who's got $5,000. And $5,000 is better than no dollars, but it's not going to plug all of the holes. And around that time, I had a friend who was working for F&W Media, which at the time, at least in my world, was most famous for being the publisher of Writer's Digest magazine. And they had been, I believe, exclusively nonfiction in all of their divisions for years, and they were looking at getting into fiction. And so this friend of mine reached out and said, hey, can I pick your brain about how to start a fiction imprint? And I said, better idea, just buy Tyrus and I'll run it from the inside. So F&W bought Tyrus. We had a lot of cool things happen. We won a Barnes & Noble Discover Award for fiction, got books reviewed in the New York Times, the Washington Post, the Wall Street Journal, all of this really, really, really cool stuff. And again, I went to a second tier state college, did not have a good GPA, just kind of stumbled into it, didn't have any connections when I started, just was myself and did what I could. Ultimately, F&W sold Tyrus to Simon & Schuster in late 2016, early 2017. And at that point, Simon & Schuster was like, thanks for the books. You did a good job, but we don't actually need to keep you on staff or anything like that. So I had a brief tenure working for Simon & Schuster, running my own imprint, but a brief tenure doing so, which later on I thought about it because I had to go to a meeting there after I left Simon & Schuster, and I saw some of our books on the bookshelves of one of the higher ups at Simon & Schuster, and I thought, you know what? That's pretty good for the people who had no idea what they were doing, living in the Midwest, who decided one day to start a publishing company. The fact that I'm sitting up here and I can see something that I did and that I worked on here, which from the time I was a little kid was like a pinnacle of, oh, this is publishing. This is where the books come from. This is the books delivery room. It felt pretty good. But again, my whole path, completely atypical. And then once I left Simon & Schuster, I've been approached a bunch of times about starting new publishing companies. I've been approached about helping people launch publishing companies. And I've got no interest right now because to me, the publishing industry is in a major evolutionary stage at the moment. There is, I think, my uneducated opinion, I think there is a lot that is changing about publishing, about books, about who is in charge of the publishing companies. The idea that at one point it was something of a comfortable person who was being charitable to pay money to have these stories told, to now having people who are much more about what is the bottom line and how do we maximize profit and how do we cut dead weight and how do we do all of these things that are not about telling story, are not about connecting human beings. That's kind of where I think things are, which fine, that's the way that business goes. That's the way capitalism goes. But I don't know that it's sustainable, and I don't know that it is highlighting and putting out the best books, or at least the books that would speak most to me. But again, I say that, and I also tell you that I don't read that much anymore. So it's like I'm critical of something that I'm not even consuming. I just look at what people are saying about the publishing industry. I read on Reddit. I read other places where people are talking about it, and I'm just like, I'm so sorry that this is what you're seeing right now. The editorial staff, the people who are doing the hard work of reading and lobbying for and championing books and editing books, they are so overworked relative to hours spent and dollars made. And It is a labor of love, and I tip my cap to all of them, and I love and appreciate what they're doing. I just don't think that they're existing in an environment that really allows them to transfer and translate their enthusiasm into the bond between writer and reader in a way that existed in the past. And I could be over romanticizing the past. That is also the case, but it just feels like, how is everybody not burned out all of the time? And that's not a place where you would hope that, like, to me, the highest form of art would be coming from.
Mm-hmm. No, that I agree with everything you said. That's it's interesting to just hear it, because obviously I've been working with you for a couple months now, but I haven't known like all of these details and stuff. It's just interesting to see where you started and how it evolved and stuff like that. But since we've kind of talked about that past aspect of it, I was going to go into just describing what exactly these roles are that we've been discussing in these past couple questions. Because I mean, I'm type A, like I researched everything even before like we started working, just because I wanted to know, but I still feel like I really didn't have that big of an idea. If I played it off like I did, I'm glad, but I really did it before we started. So I was hoping you could just describe in whichever order you feel like the role of an editor, an agent, a publisher, just how that all kind of works.
Sure. Let's just go in order of when a writer would be interacting with these people. The first person that they're going to reach out to is an agent. And an agent is the go-between between the author and the publishing house. And an agent has a good agent. I'm gonna acknowledge that there are people across all of the spectrum, but what you would hope for from an agent is that they know the people who can acquire a book at a publishing house. So the acquiring editor at publishing house. So they know, based on what your book is, who might be interested in buying that book. And so they would send it out to 10 publishers. In a perfect world, multiple publishers are like, yes, we would be interested in acquiring this. And then they get into a bidding war, which helps the agent and the author. An agent does not get paid until they sell that book to a publisher, at which point they get 15% of whatever the sale goes for. So your book sells for $100,000, your agent's getting $15,000. The agent is also then going to be working on selling the translation rights for your book. They're going to be working on the audio. They might be working with a co-agent for something like film. And the other value that an agent brings is that there are a lot of publishing houses, especially the larger ones, that will not take direct submissions from an author. And it's because if they did, they would get inundated with just manuscripts all day. And it would be impossible to separate the wheat from the chaff. It would be just an endless stream of words just being shot at them. So an agent develops a relationship with the editors and the other staff at a publishing house so that when the publishing house receives an email from the agent, they say, oh, I know this person. I respect this person. This person knows what we're looking for, and this person wouldn't have sent it unless they did. So it greatly simplifies the culling process for editors to be able to have trusted agents who they know the kind of work that the publishing house is doing. So we've got this book, we've sold it for $100,000, we've given $15,000 to the agent, and now we're going to be working with the publishing house. And the first person that you're gonna have there is the acquiring editor, the person who has championed this book, and it is going to go into developmental edit. So even though everyone agrees that this is a good book, there are likely going to be some things that need some tightening and some fixing and some questions about, well, what if we did this instead of this? And how would this work? An editor has to have a vision for what the book is, what the author's intentions were, and what the market is looking for, and try to find out how to blend all of those things together in as smooth a way as possible. And that is reading the book, marking it up, sending an editorial letter to the author and saying, hey, can you think about these things? And when they do that, this is important for people to hear. When an editor brings suggestions to you, when they bring their edits to you, they're not telling you, you have to change these things exactly as I see it, or we're going to terminate this contract. A good editor is going to say, I'm feeling like there's a little bit of a disconnect here, or there's a problem here. Here are some things that might make it better, but you might also come up with something. Now that you have been made aware of this issue, you might also have a solution that you know and that you could be into fixing. So it's this collaborative nature going back and forth between the editor and the writer to make the best book possible. The publisher is sort of the head of the division of the press, of the imprint. These words are all fairly synonymous. And the publisher might be overseeing multiple acquiring editors. They are also overseeing the designers, the publicity department, the marketing department, the sales department. And so the publisher has to take a view of knowing what all of these individual pieces are, how they fit together, trusting in the people who they have on staff to do the job that is going to make things as market ready as possible. And then having to be the ultimate person with whom the buck stops. If the books do well, great. If the books don't, then there's a problem. And then there's going to have to be some examination of what went wrong. And the frustrating thing for me as a publisher was that you could have a beautiful book that is immaculate in its design and its editing. It is a book that everyone should read, but if you are not able to draw attention to that book, if reviewers don't pick up on it, maybe a reviewer doesn't like it, maybe a reviewer doesn't review it at all, if bookstores don't get behind it, if it doesn't find champions in the marketplace, it will die on the vine, and it will have been this beautiful, beautiful thing that just never had a chance to grow. And it's not anybody's fault, really. It's just kind of like some things win and some things don't. And that was also a really difficult part of the publishing process for me, is knowing that something is so good and being super excited to share it with an audience, but never being able to get the audience's attention. And when I see things now, like I understand how important book talk is, and I understand how important social media can be in making some books go viral and get attention, I'm both intrigued by the possibilities that are afforded to us because social media is so ubiquitous. And I am also horrified knowing that social media is so ubiquitous and sometimes, I guess I'll be charitable, sometimes the best and brightest among us aren't the people who have the microphones and the cameras shined on them. And there is a lot of oxygen stolen by things that for me, that are not to my taste. I was about to say something more disparaging, but I'll just say that are not to my taste. And that's demoralizing when you feel like you want to champion this thing so much because you believe that it could be very powerful and important. But instead, everyone's watching the clip of somebody on their skateboard running into a wall at 100 miles an hour and being like, oh, this is what we should be focusing our attention on. But no, but I guess.
Yeah. The other thing I was going to ask you, since you have a lot of experience, especially with the editorial side and the publishing side, is there ways, because like obviously you seek out kind of the person you want to be helping you. How do you personalize both of those aspects? Does that make sense?
To like, you mean like
your own style, I would say.
Do you mean like who I would want working with me to be able to help acquire books and sort? Yeah.
Like how do you establish kind of like that brand?
Yeah. A lot of that is vibes. And I would definitely, there was a point when we were running Bleak House when we, I think at one point we had over a dozen interns at one time. And it was because the university here in Madison would send them to us. They'd be like, hey, can this person wants to get into publishing. Can you give them an internship? And I'd be like, yeah, I guess. Like, cool. But it would be like, I'd have some people who would show up who are maybe the type A people who had studied a lot and would be very well informed about books and analyzing books and could deliver like great book reports. But I don't think they really understood what Bleak House was or who we were. And then I would have other interns, like we used to have pizza parties. We'd have candy eating contests. We were listening to punk rock very loud. We would build forts in the office with boxes from all the books that were coming in. And we would still get stuff done. But like the people who got the like, oh, I get it. Like we are experiencing joy and we are experiencing what it means to be human. And we want to share that experience with other people. Then when books would come in and they would read them before they got to me and they would get passed on to me, they would be able to be like, you know, this has pizza party, fort building vibes. Even if it's something that would like ultimately was a book about a tragedy, it would be like, but there's a zest for life that is contained here in this office, that is contained here in this book, that is contained in this experience. And that those people who were confident enough in themselves to say, yeah, this is who I am. I get what you're doing. It resonates with who I am as a person. And it resonates with me when I read this book. That's kind of how it would work. And I was absolutely blessed to have some really talented, capable, good human beings who were interns who then went on to become agents or become editors at other publishing companies. And I think about that some days where I'm like, how in the hell did any of us end up actually getting a paycheck doing any of these things? And I really truly believe that it was because we knew who we were. We weren't trying to be somebody else. And we recognized that there were a lot of readers who felt similarly and that there were authors who felt similarly. And our job was to put them all in touch.
Mm-hmm. No, that makes complete sense. The next thing I wanted to touch on is something you wish you had known going into the business. And then also with the way it's all changed, what would you tell people now compared to what you would have told yourself before? Or is it the same even?
You know, what's interesting. It's like what I wish I would have known. If I would have known, I probably wouldn't have stuck around. If I would have known about the hours, the stress, the low paying money for a long time, I probably would have been like, sounds cool, but not for me. And there's something certainly empowering about being naive when I was naive. but I guess I would really sort of lean heavy on the idea of you can't be Manhattan. You can't be a multi-billion dollar company. You can't compete with who they are. You can't do what they do. So it's very important that whatever you do, you feel good about it in such a way that even if in 20 years you're done, you're out of the industry, you can look back and be like, yeah, but I did good work and I had a good time. And I think about some of those offers that have been made to work for other publishing companies or start new publishing companies or counsel other publishing companies. And I think about most of those opportunities would have meant compromising who I was or who I am. And it would have sucked the joy out of that. And that even happened with when Bleak House was purchased and then when Tyrus Books was purchased. Like, you have to go into a corporate structure that exists and that has been successful for the people who created it. And I couldn't expect people to bend to who I was. So I had to sort of fit in. And the more time I had to spend fitting in, the less my joy was. For people who are starting today, I would say all of what I just said. And I would also just be very clear that within the traditional structure of the publishing industry, there isn't a lot of money sitting around. There isn't the people who are making good money, who have worked their way up the ladder, likely had to spend a lot of time not making good money. And with the cost of living being what it is and the compensation being offered what it is, you have to understand that you have to really, really love this and be prepared to see your friends and your family being able to have stability and afford things that may not be attainable for you. I can also say that I have friends who have a lot of money who are not happy with their life. They've been successful, but I don't know that they'll ever know the joy of like standing on stage with Morgan Freeman and like just saying, what is my life and how is this happening? And ultimately, it's a decision that we all have to make before we die of what's going to make us happy, what's going to make us persevere, what's going to give us purpose in life, and realize that what is being pushed as the important stuff for others may not be attainable or desirable to us.
Yeah. No, I think that's really important and valuable advice. I think it's interesting that it coincides, but it's also like a little bit different, I guess, at the same time, even though like the advice stays the same, even though the business has changed.
Yeah.
Pretty drastically in the time that you've started.
I also kind of wanted to jump in too, because for a long time, especially in the early days of the rise of self-publishing, and self-publishing itself has existed for decades, but the self-publishing that we see now, especially with like ebooks being readily available, in the early days, there was a little bit of defiance coming from people who were choosing to self-publish, that like traditional publishing is going to die. And now we all can be our own publishers and no one's going to tell me what my cover needs to look like. No one's going to tell me how to edit my book. And I pushed back a lot on that. And it might have been a little bit of ego because it's like, well, you're saying that I'm not going to be relevant. And I disagree with that. But it's also because I had the benefit of seeing what was coming in to the slush pile of people submitting manuscripts and seeing a lot of not very good books where when people were told, hey, this probably needs some work and no, this isn't ready for the market. The defiance of like, no, you're just stupid and don't understand my genius. And I'm going to put out this book and I'm going to make $1 million. It's no, you're not. And so like early on, there were a lot of people who turned to self-publishing because their work was not being accepted by the larger framework of the industry. I would say, anecdotally speaking, based on stories that I read, that there are a lot of people who are intentionally choosing self-publishing, understanding what goes into it, what goes into the work, and are able to make a good living or be successful or make money that way. And I applaud them for doing what they're doing. And it's part of, I think, the evolution of what the publishing industry is or what a book's life looks like from beginning to end. And I think that there are still a lot of people who are delusional about the quality of their work who are going to choose to self-publish because they think that the only thing stopping them from being a multimillionaire New York Times bestselling author is that publishing doesn't understand their genius, and that's incorrect. But I have evolved as the discussion has evolved on this matter.
Yeah.
And that same technology allows for more independent publishing houses to pop up. The technology is there for like an ebook only publisher or print on demand one, but it still requires a certain amount of competency to do it correctly.
Mm-hmm. For my last two questions, I kind of wanted to end on like more of like a fun, like positive note, since we've talked about some of the harder parts of this. What would you say is your favorite part about editing or just the experience you've had in your different positions?
I absolutely love the human connection. I love being able to talk to an author and to say, what did you want to write about? And then being able to talk to them and say, because this book is different from what you've stated, but let's figure out why. And let's talk about why your characters are doing the things that they're doing and why this matters. What is it that you're trying to say? And I love that. I love being able to bear witness to an author and the story they want to tell and compassionately be able to discuss with them how they could better tell their story and why their story is important and vital and the legacy that it leaves behind. I love that. I love talking about characters and story. And if I had my druthers, I would just do that all day long. I would just talk to people about their books and their stories. And, you know, with Collaborist, I do often have an opportunity to do that kind of work. But I also have a lot of friends who are writers, and I love talking to them about what they're doing. Because it's also helping me make sense of my own life and my own understanding of the world. And I think that every minute we spend better understanding who we are, our place in the world, our purpose, is fulfilling what it is that we're supposed to be doing with our time on Earth.
Yeah, no, 100%. And if you had to describe your overall journey from the beginning in one word, what would you use?
It's not a word that I would normally use, and it feels cliche, but I feel very blessed. I've had some really amazing experiences, and I treasure them. I have so many people and stories and everything that I've experienced, and I feel so lucky. And I don't ever take that for granted. I'd love it.
Yeah. Is there anything else you want to say on anything that we talked about or touched on?
No. And I guess what I just want to say is that it's been a joy working with you, and I look forward to continuing to work with you. And I feel good knowing that the future of books and writing and storytelling has people who are emerging every day who want to do that work and who feel called to do it and who understand the beauty and the magic of books in the way that you do and the way that so many other people do. It's so nice to know that human beings feel so driven to capture what it means to be alive in book form in a way that is permanent or semi-permanent. And so thank you, Miss Maddie, for caring about books and words.
Yeah. Thank you so much for the opportunity. It's been amazing.
Yeah. And I look forward to all the more work we're going to do.
The continuation.
If there are any of you collaborators in the audience who have questions or want to share your own experience about being in the publishing industry, put them in the comments or send us an email, and I would gladly continue this conversation. We could add another person, couldn't we, Maddie? We could add someone else and hear their stories and why they did it. And like Miss Joanna last episode,
yeah, that's exactly who came to mind. Yeah.
All right. Well, if you enjoyed this episode, please feel free to subscribe and rate and review and all of those other things that they tell you to do that the algorithm cares about. Oh, that's something I want to talk about, not on this episode, but in the future, is our reliance on social media and what I believe to be the mistaken belief that somehow AI can come in and be a better book writer than humans. Mm-hmm. So that is a future episode of Collaboracast. That is it from here. Oh, this is going to be a big test. First story. For community.
Collaborous.
Bye, Miss Maddie.
Bye.